Welcome to another flash edition of Musonomics, supported by Luminate. In New York, I'm Larry Miller from the Music Business Program at NYU Steinhardt.
And I'm Lynn Gonzalez, a partner at the law firm of Granderson Des Rochers.
And on this episode, not so much going on this week, actually.
So much going on this week, Larry.
A lot going on this week. A big executive shuffle at Warner Music Group. Universal Music Group had a rough-ish earnings call. We're going to ask the question, are we at streaming maturity? And generative AI's fair use battle heats up. That and Brat Summer. But first, the Warner Music Group executive shuffle. Let's unpack this. So what happened at Warner? Well, Max Lasada's position as head of recorded music is eliminated. He's out after 8 years. This is happening at the end of their fiscal year on September 30th. Julie Greenwald was initially announced late last week as transitioning to the role of chairman of Atlantic Music Group, but is now slated to also exit her role on September 30th, transition to a consultancy for a few months, and then leave the company in January. What does this mean? Well, I guess the first thing that we should talk about is that Elliot Grange is rising up now from the CEO of the company that he founded, 10K Projects, which Warner Music Group acquired a majority stake in last year for a little bit over $100 million, to CEO of Atlantic Music Group. So this is the same Elliot Grange who is the son of UMG chairman and CEO Lucian Grange. Earlier this year, Warner Music Group said they'd be reducing their headcount by 600 people, or about 10% of their workforce. And they hope to get that done, too, by September 30th. Lynn, what do you think about all this?
I think a few things. I mean, the first thing I think is it's been rough to watch the way that Julie's exit is happening. I think Julie is a legendary executive, and she's done an amazing job creating a great environment over there at Atlantic. And it's hard to see her go without all of the appropriate fanfare. And just the way that it's rolling out, it doesn't look nice.
Pretty good run after 20 years, too, right?
I mean, she's had quite a career. I think, you know, Max similarly has done a great job, I think, in the 8 years he's been there, at least from the outside looking in. It seems like he's been successful. So it just seems like a blunt exit for him. I'm curious to see what he does next. I imagine it's got to be very difficult for a lot of the staff at Atlantic because Julie and Craig have long-term executives that have been there for a very long time. It must be strange for them to suddenly be reporting to someone that's as young as Elliot and as new to the organization. I'm sure that will be a challenge. And, you know, a lot of people find it really interesting that someone with the last name Grange is controlling the majority of the major labels at this point in the game. You know, it is hard to digest, I think. It'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. And, you know, we'll see who on that remaining headcount is eliminated, but it looks like it may be a little bumpy. I feel like this could be emotional for a lot of people over there.
What additional changes do you think could be coming down the line here?
Well, I mean, we're reducing headcount by 600 and we're trying to save money. And there are a lot of very senior people that are, you know, a lot older than Elliot who we'll see if they stick around. Clearly, they're trying to make the company a bit leaner and flatten the company a bit, eliminate some of the roles in between Kinsel and have him have more direct reports. So I would think there are some senior roles that may be in jeopardy if you're trying to save costs and, you know, have a more direct reporting structure.
What's Elliot Grange known for other than having sold his company to Warner Music Group last year?
Yeah, I mean, he's had some success with 10K for sure, and he shows tremendous potential. He's had artists like Tekashi 6ix9ine, Ice Spice. There's others like Capella Gray, XXXTentacion. I never know how to pronounce that properly. It's interesting because while they've been artists that have had, you know, some success and a decent amount of success, they're not the most like culturally significant artists, right? They're not the most diverse artist either. We haven't seen him have a lot of success, you know, outside of the hip hop realm, but, you know, by all accounts, he's a credible executive and a talented executive. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But he is quite young compared to a lot of the senior executives over at Atlantic that have been there for many, many years. Over at the other House of Grange, it seems like UMG's stock has been on quite a ride. What have you seen over there, Larry?
Well, so quarterly earnings came out late last week, and UMG stock tanked a bit on earnings, but have then clawed back to the level that they were at before the earnings announcement. Let's just unpack a little bit about what that means. UMG announced that their streaming revenue was up 6.9% in their second quarter, which was way short of analyst expectations of 11%. Ad-supported revenue fell 3.9% due to missing a month of TikTok revenue, which is all ad-supported. And you remember when UMG content was pulled from the platform earlier this year during negotiations?
I do.
Also, Meta dropped premium music videos from Facebook, so no ad-supported revenue coming from there either. So those two events drove the negative pressure on ad-supported revenue during the period. But overall revenues at UMG were still up 11.3%. Net profit was up 46% in the first half of the year, which was way ahead of expectations. When UMG stock was impacted late last week, it prompted a conversation about streaming maturity. And the question is, are we at peak streaming? I say no. What say you, Lynn?
I say no. There's still room for growth here.
Well, the fact is, Spotify, bellwether of the streaming companies, has been profitable now for three straight quarters. Subscriber growth in high revenue markets is definitely slowing down. And although it can't go up forever, they can and I think will raise prices and roll out new services. The company hinted at a $17 to $18 a month super premium service. For me, that's a long-awaited hi-fi audio, high bitrate streaming, and super fan club access platform. They think 20% of their paid subscribers will buy it. I know I will, but Music Business Worldwide did the math, and they said, look, there are 246 million paid subs on Spotify at the end of the second quarter this year. 20% of that is 49.2 million, generating, let's see, $2.92 billion in additional revenue for Spotify. And if, let's say, two-thirds of that goes to labels, publishers, artists, and songwriters, that's $1.96 billion more for the music industry. So that's good. And there were 500 million paid subscribers in total across all DSPs at the end of last year, twice as many as there were in 2019. And that's a lot, but it's still only 8% of the world's population.
Well, I mean, if it's only 8% of the world's population, then we sure do have some room to grow.
I think so. But there were lots of insider sales in the last quarter. Daniel Ek, himself, cashed out $345 million in Spotify stock since July 2023. Royalty accountant Hunter Giles wondered how many Spotify streams would it take to generate that much income at a third of a penny per stream, and assuming that an artist owned all of their publishing and master rights. Answer, $115 billion. That is $15 billion more than Spotify's most streamed artist over the last 12 months. And for what it's worth, Martin Lorentzen, Spotify co-founder, cashed out $166 million worth of his stock, equating to 55 billion streams. And look it, entrepreneurs routinely sell down their stake in their companies when and in the years after they go public to diversify their holdings, but that's a lot of insider sales. But it sort of begs the question that everybody's been asking, will AI upset the streaming juggernaut? Well, back at the end of June, the RIAA brought their suit on behalf of labels against generative AI platforms Suno and Udio. Lynn, over to you for the legal unpacking.
So they filed the same complaint against both services in both instances. It should be noted that both services charge a monthly fee. And I mention that because the crux of the complaint is that the services train their AI on copyrighted sound recordings for the ultimate purpose of poaching listeners, fans, and potential licensees of the sound recordings. Suno is not arguing that infringement at all. In fact, they're claiming a fair use defense. They specifically acknowledge that they did the copying. But there's a few things cutting against that fair use defense. I think the first is the service is like extremely, very much commercial in nature. I think they're valued at $500 million right now. They charge users up to $24 a month to access the service, and they give users all rights to the resulting output to use commercially. Users can use the resulting AI-generated files for commercial purposes on YouTube, Spotify, etc., and monetize them. Their main defense really is that they're just making intermediate copies of the protected works for the purposes of training the AI on the unprotectable elements of the songs, like the genre and the style. The copies aren't heard by anyone else, and they're made solely to analyze the sonic and stylistic patterns of the, universe of pre-existing musical expression. They're also making some arguments against, you know, monopolistic approaches to copyright in the music industry, and I am very eager to see those arguments play out. But my prediction on this one would be, while these are very well-funded services that can afford to defend against this litigation, it's likely that these cases are going to settle. That would be my guess, and we won't get any instructive law out of this.
Yeah, you know, this reminds me a little bit of the ephemeral copies case brought by music publishers during the earliest days of the download business. And the publishers and the others on their side of the suit ended up winning that one. And this one kind of feels like, you know, they're going to have to come to the conference room and make a deal. I can't imagine that the fair use defense wins the day utterly in these cases.
And I can't imagine the amount of discovery that would need to go into this litigation, the analysis that would have to go into how each song was inputted into their service. I just can't see it playing out through full litigation.
Yeah, we're going to watch it closely. But on a lighter note, how about Brat Summer, Lynn? What even is Brat Summer?
It's Brat Summer. I'm wearing my green right now. I mean, what an artist development story. So Charlie XCX has released her new album titled Brat. And the Brat imagery is a very stark green color that pops with just the word Brat very simplistically written over it. And, you know, Charlie XCX is owning the word Brat. Charlie released her first album in April of 2013. That was her first major label album. And here we are in 2024, where she is just at the peak of her career. This album tied with her tweet acknowledging Kamala's campaign and saying that she was Brat gave her a ringing endorsement that I think really resonated with the youth and her fans. And I think it's really cemented her as a superstar and tied her to this campaign. So I just think it's a great artist development story, a great social media campaign, and I'm here for it.
And a great way to wrap up this episode of the Musonomics Flash. So that is it for this week.
We made it through the week. I can't believe it.
I know. Who knows what next week will bring?
My head is spinning already. Thanks for having me again, Larry. It's always a pleasure to be here.
From the Music Business Program at NYU Steinhardt, I'm Larry Miller.
And from GDR, I'm Lynn Gonzalez.
This Musonomics podcast was executive produced by Lars Murray. Thank you, Lars. Technical production by Isaac Gaines. Thank you, Isaac. And if you like what you heard, please share the episode with a friend and be sure to follow us wherever you get your pods so you don't ever miss a new one. And while you're at it, please give us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Pods or wherever you get them. It really helps. Once again, thank you to Luminate for their support on this episode. We'll see you next time.